All right. Hey, thanks for still hanging around or checking the show out for the first time. This is episode number 74, I believe, of the Dan Time podcast, where not every week it's Dan talking to Dan, but as many weeks as possible. I want this to be a place where a Dan can be a Dan, where we can celebrate our Danhood together, and where I can introduce people listening to the show. And obviously, you don't have to be named Dan yourself if you're a listener. This could just be something that's intriguing to you, a little bit different from what's out there, what's being presented to you. Yes, it's ridiculous. No, it doesn't make a ton of sense to do a show like this, but it makes sense to me, and it's, I always feel like, you know, if it's slightly funny to you, it's going to appeal to somebody. Anyway, I'm really stoked. This is back-to-back weeks I've been able to feature stand-up comics. And if you missed the episode last week with, he doesn't say Metro Detroit, I think he says Suburban Detroit or just Michigan-based comic, Dan Turco, go back and listen to that one. Dan, when we were wrapping up, said, you gotta look up Dan Duvall, get him on the show, and luckily, Dan and I were able to connect here. So, we're going north of the border and northwest Victoria, British Columbia-based comic, Dan Duvall. He's appeared on multiple podcasts. He and his sister, Sarah, have a podcast, The Hate Locker, you might be familiar with. We'll be going undergoing some rebranding, as I understand it. Mm-hmm. And he's also been featured on the documentary Funny Tweets. Mm-hmm. His written word has appeared on Cartoon Network and Adult Swim. Dan, thanks so much for being here today. How's it going?
Yeah, what's up, Dan? It's going good, man. I love this. I love a podcast for Dans, by Dans, finally. I love how you were like, you could just be a Dan. But to me, Dans, like, Dans are a special breed, I feel like. Like, not every alcoholic is named Dan, but every Dan's an alcoholic. You know what I mean? Like, it's not... Like, we're a special, we're like, there's a reason why more than half of us get named Danimal at some point.
Danimal.
In our lives. No one ever called you that?
I get called that all the time by my very close network of friends, and I cannot believe it's taken 74 episodes for someone to, I've never heard that outside
That's
of my.
That's crazy to me. No one else has ever been, dude, if you're not, if your friends aren't calling you Danimal, you might be a Daniel.
Dan, I also.
Daniels and Dan's very different. But Daniels, like Daniel has, Daniels have their shit together. You know what I mean? Like Daniels.
They do.
Pay their taxes and shit. Dan's are different. Daniel will drive you to the airport, you know? Dan will also drive you to the airport, but you'll have to blow into your breath, into the breathalyzer right. And strap to get it to start. For him. We're a fun bunch. So. Yeah, right on. Thanks for having me, man. Happy to be here. Dan's across America, across international borders. This is a wild ride. Yeah, I'm on the Pacific. Where are you? Are you in Detroit?
I'm in Pensacola, Florida, Gulf Coast.
Florida. Yeah. One time, I used to work in like a retail drugstore in Canada called Shoppers Drug Mart. It's a lot like CVS. And we had a lot of tourists come through because I live in a port town, like a heavy tourist town. We get a lot of cruise ships that go up to Alaska and they stop here. Victoria is like one of the most visited tourist towns in Canada.
I've been one time.
You been? Yeah. Oh, cool.
20 years ago.
I was helping this lady. This lady, she was like a little short round lady, and she had the biggest gold blonde hair. And she was old and really like kind of Trump rich looking, you know what I mean? Like rich, right. But like gold plates, not solid gold, like just fake rich kind of. Like she had like the gaudy jewelry on and stuff. And I was like, how are you enjoying your trip? And she leaned into me and she said, I'll tell you what. She said, I am from Pensacola, Florida, and I don't even know where I am right now. So anytime anyone mentions Pensacola, Florida, that's the first thing I think of.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's down here we actually call it Lower Alabama because
Lower
it's extreme northwest Florida Yeah, if you're in Pensacola, you're about 30 minutes from the Alabama border in Mobile, Alabama.
Right.
But I like Pensacola. There's a lot of towns along the Gulf Coast here where it's mostly the type of people that you mentioned.
But yeah, Pensacola, places that are just places that only probably have like 5 to 7 years left before they're completely wiped out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Climate change.
Well, we got a lot of people here with the military, the Navy. I've actually met people from the Northwest and met some Canadians, but yeah,
I live just north of Washington State. Actually, technically, Victoria is below the U.S. border. We are north of Bellingham, Washington. We're south of Bellingham, Washington. There's like an inlet in Washington State, and Vancouver Island just tucks right in there, right in perfect. And
yeah.
I live right at the southern tip of Vancouver Island, which is below the U.S. border, the mainland border.
I've got
exciting stuff, geography lessons from Dan's big time here.
Well, yeah. I listened to your episodes. A couple of them are appearances on The Girls Get a Guest and the High School Sucked episode from a few years ago.
High School Sucked was a fun time with Darcy Michael and Jane Stanton.
Yes.
That was a fun podcast. Darcy blew up and got too famous for that.
It was, I mean, really like between the three of you guys, it was a laugh a minute, a laugh a half a minute.
No, we had a fun time. I was producer Dan, and mostly I would chime in, and they would say, "Shut the fuck up, Dan," and then that was kind of the whole thing.
The story about you're sitting on empty, and you're giving her a ride back from one of her performances, or something along those lines.
Oh yeah, we ran out of gas the first time me and Jane Stanton road gigged together. I was opening for her. And I was driving, and we ran out of gas and pulled into the gas station on empty. I was like, oh man, it was like my first big, not even big, it was just my first road gigs opening for somebody. And I just wanted to do good and wanted to be liked so bad. And I just almost ran out of gas. It's a classic.
Well, Dan, I wanted to talk about Victoria for just a second, because I've been there. It was like one day en route to Vancouver, and spent like another day in Vancouver, and that was it. And I loved it. It's very idyllic, I guess you'd say, especially in Victoria. And
yeah.
Did you say tip to tip on that? Is it a barrier island or not?
What is a barrier island?
I think it's like a strip that's unattached to the mainland, but maybe.
Otherwise, isn't it not an island? Isn't it then an inlet?
Yeah.
But you're just talking about more land. Those are two things.
But I remember you talking about did you bike across, or you've done it before? It's about 6 hours.
I've done that. So Vancouver Island is it's a big island. It's 6 hour drive each way, 6 hours to go tip to tip from Victoria to Port Hardy. It's beautiful, mountainous. Tofino on the west coast is one of the most beautiful places in the world. It's on like a lot of top 10 lists of places to visit. A lot of whales, a lot of bears, a lot of eagles, that sort of thing. A lot of rainforests. It's truly a magnificent place. It's phenomenal. Victoria is not even a mid-sized city, like probably around 275,000-300,000 people. It's the capital, so the Capitol building is here. A lot of really good places to eat, a lot of breweries, a lot of bars, a lot of comedy. We have one of the best comedy clubs in the country. I'm biased because I booked the club, but also it's very good. It's a lot of people shoot specials there. Ivan Decker shot his last special there. Henry Sir, New York, is shooting a special there next weekend. It's a great city. It rains a lot. It's raining right now pretty hard. But we have like an incredible seawall. It's great. It's an amazing place. Vancouver is an hour and a half long ferry ride and then an hour drive on either side. And Vancouver is much bigger, probably a couple million people, I think. Vancouver is a stunning city. It's beautiful. It's all glass and nestled into the mountains with the ocean on one side and mountains on the other. It looks like the future. It's a gorgeous city. It is very much resting on its looks. Not a very friendly city. Everyone there is dead inside because rent is like $30,000 a month. Not really, but it's like San Francisco pricing. So it's very, very expensive. And they love to tear down arts venues as fast as possible. And it's a little bit soulless. I like to visit there. I would never live there again. I've lived there multiple times. I prefer Victoria just because it's a bit of a slower pace. It's more chill. Like, I'm on the road a lot. So when I'm home, I'd like it to be relaxing and kind of chill. It's a very walkable city. I'm an avid cyclist and runner, so cycling is good. But I mean, there's a lot of outdoor stuff in Vancouver too. It's really close to Whistler and all that stuff. It's a beautiful place to visit. Vancouver is a stunningly beautiful city. You can be downtown in the morning and snowboarding in the afternoon. It's like pretty cool that way. But yeah. I prefer living here, and it's good. It's good here. There is a big cycling trip that you brought up that I do once a year. That is, you cycle from Victoria up the west coast of the island to Port Renfrew. If you're a cyclist, if you're a road cyclist, and you like to hurt yourself, this is it. This is a checklist thing you got to do. It's called the Circle Route, the Marine Loop. I believe it's called the Marine Loop. Goes from Victoria. There's a trail that goes out to Souk, which is about 60K. And then it goes north of there to Port Hardy. You got to take the highway, but it's like twisting, winding all uphill almost the whole way through rainforests along the coast. Gorgeous. You get to Port Hardy, and then you cut across. There's an old logging road that cuts straight across the island to the east side to a place called Cowichan Bay. And it's an old logging road that they've paved, and it's about another 75-80K. I don't know how far that is in miles. It's like 2 miles. And then it's not. It's like probably like 30, 40, 50 miles or something. It's very remote. There's no cell service, nothing. It's bear country. It's like forest. It's cool. I can't overstate how gorgeous it is. It's beautiful. The biggest tree on Vancouver Island is a sequoia, is in that region. If you ever heard of the Fairy Creek protests in Victoria, where they're tearing, or on Vancouver Island, where they're tearing down old growth forest and logging it, and people freaked out and got guns and went to protect it and got into big fights with the police out here, that happened on that route. And so you go across to there to Cowichan, and then you come down the island on the east side, and there's a little ferry you take across.
I think we took a ferry when we were there. Yeah, over to Vancouver.
Yeah, there's a lot of ferries. There's a very short one that takes like 20 minutes. It goes from Mill Bay to Brentwood Bay across the inlet, and then you take there's a path that goes from downtown Victoria out to the BC ferries that you go to Vancouver, and it's also about 50K, but it's flat, goes through farmland, forest, all this. It's gorgeous. The whole thing is about 300 kilometers. It's 186 miles. So it's a 186-mile trip. I've done it 3 times, but it takes me about 11 hours to ride that on my bike. And it's, you feel sick after. Like, it doesn't feel
11
like
hours.
Something that is healthy. Like, it doesn't, you don't feel healthy after. You feel like you're crazy. Like, you feel gross. Kind
now,
of sick.
For the average person that likes to get out for a bike ride for, you know, a couple hours or so versus something like that, how do you prepare for that kind of trek? What kind of breakfast are you eating? What are you mentally getting yourself set up for?
It's mental. You
kind of know, like, here's where I'm going to stop in about 4 or 5 hours or that kind of thing.
Yeah, you got your stops planned. I bring a ton of nutrition with me. I bring like stuff I can just eat on the bike, like bars and stuff like that. Lots of water, lots of like hydro tabs in the water, stuff like that. And you just got to like when I wouldn't say that I'm like, I have a regime of training, but I'm riding my bike most days for a couple months before I do that and doing like 100K rides, 80K rides.
Yeah.
Lots of those, lots of 50s. I'm also running a lot too. Like when I'm in like full go mode, I usually run like 10K most days. And I'll take like 1 or 2 days rest, and then I'll run a half marathon every second week. And then I exercise problematically. Like I binge exercise. I really didn't do anything this year. I sat around and got fat and ate garbage, played Madden this year. So I'm just getting back to normal. It's normal for me in the last couple of weeks. I started vaping out of nowhere. I started vaping. I was a two pack a day smoker. I was an alcoholic and a drug addict for most of my life. And then when I got clean and sober about 3 months later, I quit smoking cigarettes. I quit for 6 years. I didn't touch a cigarette. And then my friend was vaping like earlier this year. And I was like, let me see that thing. Give me that thing.
Depending on what they're, it smells so good in some cases.
I hit it once, 2 weeks, toast, completely hooked. It's so much worse than cigarettes. It's so much harder to stop. It's so much more accessible. It's with cigarettes, there's an event. You go outside, you light a cigarette, you smoke it, it's gross, you're done. But with the vape, it's just all the time. I'm vaping in airports, you name it. So it's been a real battle for me to stop. I'm on day one today. So
wow. Yeah, well, I know people that have rolled from cigarettes like right into vaping. Just one day they're smoking, one and then throw that pack away and they're vaping the next day. I quit smoking cold turkey. I did that a number of times, but I think it's actually been 7 years, 8 years now.
Good job. Good job. So hard.
But I was really impressed with your story. You've probably told it and retold it so many times about, like you said, 90 pounds heavier at one point, two packs a day, drug and alcohol use. You're coming up on, if the timeline's correct, 7 years?
Yeah, December? 7 years, exactly 1 month from today. 6 years, 11 months today. So I'm not counting the days, but it's just the 21st is always the day. So
yeah.
Calculate. Yeah. Huge life changes. Huge life changes. I was like an everyday drug user by the end in the last couple of years. Everyday drinker, smoking darts like it was my job. So yeah, had to make some big changes. I was going to die if I didn't. I don't think I had like another year left in me. So
I remember you saying that on I forget which episode. Maybe it was that High School Sucked episode. I can think back to times, you know, let's say 2015, a couple years before I met my wife. I wasn't really bad off, but just a lot of drinking or just periods where I would just, 1 week I've just gone through several liters of whiskey and they're sitting on the counter, they're half empty and I'm like, what's going on here? But you look back and you think, if I didn't change anything, maybe I'd be alive, but you knew your body was telling you, hey, stop doing this to me. This is not good. Your body sends you these messages like, could you cut it out, buddy?
The hangovers get worse and worse and worse. And I was gaining so much weight and was just like, but it's more than like, it's interesting because even when I talk about vaping, it's not even the health consequences are like fourth or fifth down the list. You know, it's actually the part that sucks the most is like the servitude that you end up in to the substances. Like it just runs my life. I find myself walking around my house with the vape in my hand. You know what I mean? Like it's just everything. It's attached to everything I do. If I'm not doing it, I'm thinking about it. And it was like that with drinking and drugs. It was just especially drugs at the end. I feel like if I didn't have a cocaine addiction, that I would still be drinking in mediocrity. I feel like I wasn't drinking like in a way where like leaving Las Vegas or anything like that, but it was involved in everything that I did. It was always there, but it was usually the road to doing drugs. And so if it wasn't for the drugs, I would still be doing that, I think, because I think the drugs gave me the gift of desperation, right? Because I don't think, like even with the cigarettes, my asthma is so bad that I was like, I couldn't even walk up a flight of stairs, you know, without using an inhaler. So that is like, I have to stop. And with vaping, I don't really have that. Like I'm running and it's like not even really bothering me. Yeah. And so it's like harder because there's no real consequences other than it's controlling my life. Like I'm thinking about it all the time. Like I'm always seeing when I can. I'm always trying to get to the next place so that I can do it. It's just like, that's the worst of it to me. That's like worse than the health stuff, which says something about humans, I think. It's like so self-destructive, you know, but it's actually just, it's the hassle, really.
Yeah.
It's the hassle of it and not the fact that it's killing me for sure, you know, so.
Going back to when you started, because, I mean, I remember you saying at 13 years old, started smoking weed, trying mushrooms. The way I was trying to come at this question was, like my older brother, I think he first started drinking at 14, maybe started smoking weed. So it's that age is not terribly unusual. It does sound like that to people who have never drank or tried drugs in their life. But was there something like in your childhood, and I don't want to sound like a shrink here, but when you were 8, 9, 10, 11, that kind of led you here? Or I know you talked about ADD. The years preceding, was there anything that kind of made you a prime candidate for this?
I think it's a mixture of things. I grew up in a pretty good family, like quite a good family. My parents are still together. I have two older sisters. We all get along great. We didn't when I was a kid. We didn't get along at all. Especially me and my oldest sister, who I now have a podcast with. We fucking hated each other when we were kids. I think being the youngest of three in a family that doesn't have a ton of money can create like a scarcity mindset. In meaning that I gotta like make sure I'm getting what's mine and then some, you know? I personally think that addiction is like the substances that go along with addiction are symptoms of a mental illness. And addiction is a mental illness. And that I never really had any connection to myself. I never had any spiritual connection or any kind of spiritual guidance or anything. I just always felt very alone, and it caused me to be very self-centered. It caused me to like, I always felt like I needed, like when I was a little kid, like I needed to like convince people to like me. I was very codependent, very like, I needed to get my own way, and I would figure out how to do that. I used humor to do that. I think humor was a way of controlling when people were laughing at me. It also made me try to get people to like me, but also just if I have no sense of self, then I don't know how to like, I don't understand why someone would love me if I don't love myself. I just assume I need to trick people into liking me, which makes me transactional, which makes it so that when I'm talking to you, I'm just giving you a resume of reasons why I think you should like me. So I'm creating this persona rather than being an active participant in my life. I'm instead just trying to show everybody the version of me that I think they want that'll keep me safe. And I think that comes from being a youngest child. I think it comes from being in a family that doesn't have a ton of money. I know the spiritual guidance I got when I was a kid was like, I became really self-aware really young. I feel like I became self-aware and was like, you know, what happens after I die? Used to keep me up at night when I was a teen. And, you know, if I asked my dad, he would just be like, well, you're dead, so it won't matter. You know, that was it. If I asked my mom, she'd be like, well, we just don't really ask those questions. And that's it. You know, that's all I remember. Anyway, I could be wrong about that, but that's what I remember. And so that's pretty terrifying as a kid. You're just like, okay, because my parents are very much atheists or at least agnostic. And all of that is like a perfect brew to just know I have no sense of self. And then when I get to like 13, 14 and drugs become available, it's the same behaviors, right? It's just now the stakes are higher because there's drugs involved. Yeah. There's romantic relationships involved. There's other people involved. And also, as time goes by, I get better and better at doing those things about, like, you know, projecting a version of myself. You become a chameleon. You become like, yeah, it creates an atmosphere where you're like manipulative and like a liar and an embellisher, all of those things. And that's like how I lived my life as a kid right up until, you know, like I got sober and I had to like, I finally, you know, crashed into the mountain in the plane at 36 and then had to like admit like, hey, I don't know what I'm doing. I've never known what I'm doing. I don't know who I am as a person. Please help me. And there were 12-step programs sitting there waiting for me to help me to like do the work to get through that and actually like finally take an honest look at all the issues that I had swept under the rug for all those years, because I knew they were there. I just didn't know how to deal with them. I dealt with them by doing drugs and drinking, you know. So there's not like, I don't have like this crazy trauma where like something specific awful happened to me. It just kind of was just a perfect storm, if that makes sense. Combined sure. with me, I think, just being born with a mental illness. So, you know, ADHD, addiction, it all lives in the same apartment.
Well, and so like during this period, because this carries you through all your 20s and half your 30s, you know what you want to be doing. You're writing material, you're performing material. Are there performances that you, I know you've talked about some where it didn't go particularly well. You weren't very happy with maybe that period, but is there some material that you still use and bring out from time to time that you're like?
Yeah, totally. So I was a writer for like 10 years before I ever did stand up. I started on Twitter and started just writing jokes on Twitter in like 2009, I want to say. And I have written about 20,000 jokes on Twitter, just like one-liner short jokes. And so by the time I tried doing stand-up for my first time in my early 30s, like 31, I think, or 30, I tried doing stand-up for the first time. And I had already written, I'd like accidentally prepped for stand-up for like 10 years. So there were all these jokes that I knew were good jokes because I had tested them online already. And I just had to figure out how to say them. And now that has taken like 10 years of how to like find my voice. But bigger than that, it's tied into all the work that I've done around my sobriety and my work around my mental well-being and learning how to show up in my life. Because now, even compared to like 2-3 years ago, I've never felt more comfortable in my own skin. I've never felt more present in my own life. And so now when I'm on stage, I'm having a lot more fun. That material, a lot of it is still in there. I just tell a lot more stories now. It's a lot more like, it's less of me showing up and like being like, here are these jokes I wrote. Please like them. Please like me, which I think is what it is for most standups when they first start. I think that's kind of, you know, I mean, technically it's still like that even later, I think. But now I'm just like really enjoying it a lot more. Like I'm telling the stories and now those one-liner jokes, a lot of them that I wrote just get peppered in as punchlines into the stories. And so there's a home for them. And that's kind of fun because I'll be like, oh, I got this great story I can tell on stage. And then as I do it on stage, I realize I'm like, oh, I've written this joke. It lives there. So they find homes. All those jokes that I've written all over the years, they, as we go, they find homes within the stories and within me just getting to be myself on stage. So it's all kind of worked out, but like none of that was on purpose. It's just sort of been the way everything has unfolded. So yeah, all that stuff that I was writing and doing when I was drinking and using is not for nothing. It's finding its place now. And it definitely, like, it's just runs parallel with the work that I've done on myself. It kind of comes through in doing stand-up comedy now, which is like where I feel the most comfortable.
I like what you said there about feeling more comfortable on stage. And you probably, I know from my perspective, I always liked beer and whiskey together.
Sure. Who doesn't? I'm not some sort of pussy.
Yeah. I mean, the old Budweiser and Jack Daniels combination, it would literally make me upset if I got like a shot of Jack and a Miller Lite. Like they just didn't have Budweiser. There's something about that combination.
Yeah, it's got to be the right thing. It's got to be, sorry, I'm still here. I'm just going to the fridge. It's got to be the right thing because so much of drinking and using is rituals.
Yes.
It's rituals, man. All that shit is rituals. Like my sponsor, there's a Diet Coke I'm opening. It's not a beer, everybody, just so you know, my new addiction. So my sponsor, one of the first things he said to me when we hung out, he was like, he's like, when was the last time you had fun when you were high? And I was like, oh, geez, man, I don't know, you know? And then he's like, you're addicted to the substance, yes, but it's more of the ritual. It's like, it's texting the guy and then waiting for the guy to text back. And then you go to meet him and then he's 20 minutes late and that's part of it, you know? And then you get the bag in your hand and you flick the bag and he's talking to you, but you're not really listening, you know, and then you take the key in and you do the bump and then you're good for like 10 minutes. And then the rest of it's just a nightmare. But then you do it again because it's all the excitement that comes from all those points. And it's the same thing as going to the vape shop, buying a vape, opening the thing, being like saying the same thing, being like, you know, I quit smoking for 6 years. Now I vape, like saying the same bullshit to the guy in the vape shop, like as if he gives a shit. But it's all part of it. It's the same with alcoholics who like drink at the same bar every day. Those old regulars who go to the same bus stop every day, put on the same coat, sit down. The bartender knows their name. He knows what the drink is.
Here comes that Bev Nap. Here comes that.
Yeah. Yeah. So it makes sense that your thing had to be exactly the thing. You know, it does, right? Like I like Coke. I like Diet Coke. I don't like Coke Zero. It's the same fucking thing.
But, you know, I remember waking up.
I need that silver can, bro. If it ain't, get it out of my damn face.
But, you know, the way
we're,
that you would.
We're creatures of habit. And also, like, I'm sure that people who are addicts can, who are not addicts, can relate to that. Because I personally feel that, like, being an addict is, it's like the human experience magnified. Yeah. That's the best way I think I can explain it. It's because I'll explain it to, like, my partner who's not an addict. And she will relate to all this stuff. And I'm like, yeah, so it's like that, but like times a thousand. Like it's, and I don't know if that's how it's helpful for me. It feels more like a good description to me.
Do you feel like with your writing and your performances, when you wake up in the morning and you just have that clarity and confidence or whatever, and you look back a few years ago, because I went through this sometimes where I would wake up and you would just wake up with this dread, whether you had to make sure you got the power bill paid that day, or you had a presentation to give later that day, or you just driving yourself to work was going to be a monumental challenge. Just the way you felt waking up in that, you know, that ongoing
chaos.
Yes.
Yeah, man. Here's the thing. I still wake up like that a lot of the time. Not all the time, but a lot of the time. And I don't know if that'll. I hope that goes away one day, but I just think I'm so like, I got to think I woke up like that for like 20 years. Right. Yeah. So it takes, we say in some of the 12 step programs I'm in, is like sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. Right. And a lot of stuff changed really fast and a lot of stuff has taken years. And that's one where I got to wake up and unfuck my head. Like a lot of the time I do, these are things I got to do. I like to wake up and just fucking breathe, right? If I wake up and reach for my phone and or a vape immediately, like it's going to be harder. The day is going to be tougher. If I wake up and slowly get up and like make a coffee or go to a meeting and like meditate, I like to journal. I just got to unpack stuff. I do therapy as well. Now I've been doing that for quite a while. There's like, they have 12 steps for codependency. I've been doing that for a couple of years now. And that has been as life changing for me as getting sober. I have changed, I think, equal parts in the last 2 years that I did in the first 2 years of not drinking because of that work. It's pretty crazy. So yeah, to answer your question, yeah, man, a lot like, yeah, it's still like that, but it was worse, obviously, because before when I wake up, it was like a lot of the time, rightfully so. You know, I wake up, I gotta go through my phone, see who I need to apologize to, be terrified to open my bank statement.
And then sometimes you wake up and you're maybe already sweating.
Yeah,
you wake up,
you're not waking up sweating. Not to mention the physical side, but then also the side of like, oh, I remember one time I went out partying with a bunch of buddies after work on Friday. And then I crashed in my buddy's house. I woke up the next day. We were all hung the fuck over, like wrecked. And I was like, I'm going to order everyone pizza. I got paid yesterday and the pizza came in and my card was declined. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I got paid yesterday. That's impossible. And someone else paid for it. And then I was before smartphones. I couldn't just like check my banking app. I looked it up online or I called or something.
Called. I remember late, calling.
Like, later. I probably called or I might have like got to a computer and
your available balance is minus.
And then I looked at my transactions and it all kind of came back to me. I'd been at a bar and I was just, I withdrew over like six or seven times my entire paycheck and then was buying like the whole front of the bar shots. Like, who do, bro? You work at CVS. Like, you're not Drake. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, relax, dude. Like, so stuff like that.
Didn't you
like,
say that you're
not waking up? I'm not waking up to that anymore.
There was,
you know,
there was this expectation over time that you were like the guy that was always on. You were there to entertain the people around. You kind of had this persona that they wanted.
I don't feel that way.
Yeah.
Anymore. I don't.
That's awesome.
I did. I felt very much like there was pressure to like prove myself that I was funny or hot or something. There's always something and I mostly don't live with that anymore. I mostly just get to show up as myself. And that's the biggest gift that I've received in all my recovery is getting to know myself. I'll say that at my 5 year sobriety, like we do it, there's a ceremony when you hit each year. And my mom came to my 5 year one. She comes every year, but she came to my 5 year one. And there was a lot of people, if you're ever in recovery and people, when you go to your cake, as they call it, it's like being at your own funeral. It's like listening to people around you say the
he
nicest
was such a great
shit
guy.
About you. It's a little uncomfortable, you know, but also it's nice.
He was such a great guy. I mean, is a great guy.
He would have loved this. Yeah. So all these people were saying, you know, like, oh my God, he's become this, he's become that, he's, you know, turned into this and that. And like, he's changed so much. And my mom piped up and was like, I don't think he has become a different person. She's like, I think he's just grown into the person I always knew he was. And I'm like, bro, that is the most amazing thing that I think anyone has ever said to me in my life. My mom is a very special person. I love her very much. And she said that to me. And it was like, well, first of all, I started crying my damn eyes out. Not like I wasn't already through the whole meeting. I'm a very emotional person, but yeah. Yeah. Listening to her say that was like, and I think that's it. I think that's what happens to people when they go into recovery. They learn who they are. It's not that you change and become a different person. It's that you start, your actions start to match the version of the person. My actions started to match the version of the person I was trying to project. I actually enjoyed helping people non-transactionally just because I love people and feel like it's a good service to the world to help. And like, you know, started to actually ask people questions and then listen to the answers and not just wait for my turn to talk and stuff like that. And you learn stuff about people and then you begin to appreciate people and you learn humility, because being an addict is like that self-centered piece. People don't maybe not necessarily know, but it's a really lonely place because you don't know how to connect with people and you just kind of, yeah, that's what it is. You just wait for your turn to talk. You're like unaware of other people. Other people are like objects. They're like actors in a play, you know, and you're the main character and everything revolves around you. And you don't realize how painful that is and how lonely it is and how unsustainable it is. And then you crack the egg open and start looking at all the problems that pour out and you start cleaning up the mess and you really start caring about other people. You really become like humility, you know, people think humility, I think, or not people think, but I used to think, I didn't even know the word humility, but I thought humble meant like not saying anything good about yourself ever. And that's not really it. It's like, I think it's really important to like understand your worth and your value. I think that a really good saying I like is humility is not thinking less of yourself. It's thinking of yourself less. And I really like that. It's like, how can I be of service here? How can I be? That's one of the things I like about recovery and meetings and stuff is like, I always felt like responsible for everything. Like, it's a lot of pressure. It's a lot of pressure to feel like you owe the world something and that you're fucking in charge of everything. And, you know, you're like, you got to show up this way and you got to show up that way. It's an incredible amount of pressure. And like, gaining that humility that you gain is like such a relief. It's such a relief for me to go into a meeting and sit there and be like, I'm not the center of attention. This is not about me. and just be able to sit back and just be a cog. And like, it's such a nice place to be, to just be able to sit quietly in a room full of people and let other people talk and be interested in what they're saying and hearing. And I know a lot of this, probably if you're like, don't have addiction, might sound like, you know, oh, this guy's just a fucking narcissist, but this is what it's like being an addict. Yeah. There's narcissistic tendencies, you know, there's sociopathic tendencies. There's all these things. They all combine, you know, most of us have ADHD. It's like, it's all, like I said, they all live in the same apartment building, you know?
I think everybody's got friends. If you're at a certain age, probably about 40 something, that you've lost along the way. And I lost a couple really sweet people, mm-hmm. close friends, couple guys that were just real sweethearts to drugs. And like you said, it's in there. Your mom always knew that this version of you was there and was ready to really full bloom.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, and it takes a while. It takes, like, if you're listening to this and you're like new in recovery, it's not a sprint. These things take time. You know, I've hurt people in my recovery. I've acted in ways I didn't like in recovery. I have, you know, there's some of my hardest years have come in recovery. And we just keep trying to be better and admit when we're wrong and face up to things and just kind of try to keep moving forward, you know? So, yeah, I don't know, man. Life's pretty good. Life's pretty good now. Even though I wake up in chaos sometimes, at least I know how to get out of it now without having to numb out and do drugs. It's pretty good. I love doing stand-up comedy. I love my life. I have a wonderful partner. I got, you know, friends and family who love me. You know, I'm safe in an apartment in a place I love to live. I'm not living in a country where Donald Trump's the president. Things are all right, you know?
I was thinking about that with the election that we just went through here. And if you're, like, let's just say you live in the northernmost part of Washington State, you're just a few miles away from not having to really be a participant in this.
Yeah, it's so crazy.
Now, people listening can't see this, but my three and a half year old has climbed up into the
what's up, dude?
The host chair.
He looks cool as hell. He's got a mullet.
Yeah.
He's halfway down his back. He's got tattoos all over him. Kid's cool as hell. He's smoking a cigarette. This kid is born Florida.
Wyatt, you want to say hi? You want to get on the episode?
It's Wyatt? Of course it is.
Mm-hmm. Can you say hey, Dan?
Hey, Dan.
Hey, Wyatt. What's up, dude? Welcome to Dan time.
He's got long hair. He's got a mullet and our 7-year-old. But yeah, our 7-year-old's got a, when he was 3, we played around with his hair, made a mullet out of it.
I think it's great, man. I think he looks like the governor of Florida. That's what I picture the Florida governor looks like. Just no shirt, just mullet, ready to headbutt somebody, ready to get in a physical altercation with a Buffalo Bills fan.
Oh yeah, I want to call.
But you will lose.
Want to call out a couple places here. Heckler's Bar and Grill, is this still your main spot?
Yeah, that's like my home club. I'm doing a show there tonight, actually a fundraiser for a minor hockey team. And then I'm headlining there December 21st, which is my sober date, actually. It's my 7-year date. So if you're in Victoria, December 21st, please come out to Heckler's. There's 2 shows, 7 and 10. I would love to see you. So yes, Heckler's one of the best. If you're in Victoria, listen to this. You've never been to Heckler's, roll through every Saturday. It's like, man, top shelf. This weekend we got Sterling Scott. He was like a finalist on Canada's Got Talent, Golden Buzzer winner. You know, we got Emily Woods recording an album next week, Kevin Bozeman the week after that. It's like, yeah, it's great. We got Henry Sir, like a paid regular at the Comedy Cellar in New York, is shooting a special there next week. It's a really, I describe it as a special place where magic happens. It's crazy because it's like, it's a sports bar in the basement of a hotel. And then Saturday night, it just turns into like the most banger club. Like, it's so sick. It's great. Very fun. Very Canadian. We got Buck Hunter come through.
And before we got started, we were talking about Dan Licata.
Yeah. Dan Licata is a comic from New York. He made a special called For the Boys. I don't know him. We're not friends. I don't even think he follows me back on Instagram. But I follow him and I love him. I'm a huge fan. He's so funny. So if you're talking about Dan's, you got to get this guy. He's like, he made a special club for the boys. It is, he did it at his old junior high. It's an audience full of 15-year-olds. His whole set is all references from when he was in junior high, and they absolutely don't get it. And it's very meta. There's layers to it. It's very weird, very funny. The jokes are insane, and it's great. Go watch that. Just a shout out, other Dans. Hey, I got to ask you a question. Who's your top Dan? Who's the top of the Dan chain for you? Who's your number one get?
Oh, for the show, who's the white whale?
Yeah, who's your Dan? Who's your white, your Moby Dan?
You know, I answered this question a few weeks ago, and it kind of moves around. I mean, I'd love to have Danny DeVito. It's a Danny.
Oh, yeah. That'd be great.
But I think we were talking. I have had one Daniel on the show, and it was by accident. I actually thought he went by Dan Eaches. But Daniel Eaches, comedian out of Fresno, I'm saying this wrong. He was early on. It was one of the early episodes. Really funny guy. But he said, no, that's just my handle on Twitter because they didn't. Daniel Eaches was already taken.
Yeah, but I think I think Daniel, Danny, any iteration, I think is fine. What about, you got to get Dan Marino.
Yeah, your floor. Marino. I've reached out to Dan Rather, Dan Deerdorf. When this show was still being like conceptualized, I sent a Facebook Messenger message to Dan Deerdorf, and then that? I started to realize he used to play in the NFL, and then he was on Monday Night Football with like Al Michaels and
I don't know.
But another one, Dan Rather. Did I ever say Dan Rather?
Yeah. You got to get like, what about Daniel Radcliffe?
Yeah.
Harry Potter himself. You get him, man. You've made it. That's crazy. I love it. I love that you're representing Dan's with this podcast. I'm here for it. I'll come on this podcast anytime. We have so much more to talk about.
I love it. I want to mention it here, but I wish I had talked about it earlier. Your style, and I've noticed tonight just talking to you, that your audiences really find you conversational and like a guy that they already know. Like I've heard you described in that regard.
That is very nice of you to say that.
And if people go, your Instagram page and just watch some of these clips, you'll see what I'm talking about. The blind hardware store one was hilarious.
Yeah, right on. But well, yeah, most of the stuff I say on stage is true. Most of it is just stories and punchlines. I find there's a comedian I love who I looked up to when I started. He lives in Denver now. He's Canadian, though. His name's Sonny Dhaliwal. Unreal comic. He's so, so good. But he gave me some advice years ago. He said, don't think of it as you versus the audience. Think of it as you and the audience are in an experience together and you just have different roles. And I really took that to heart. And I feel like rather than going out there and trying to like sell you a joke, I would rather come out and just connect with people. And that way everybody's having a good time. I'm having fun. New jokes will flow out. We will have riffs. We will have a good time. It's going to be fun. Even if it's not like a polished machine gun of jokes, it's like, sometimes it does end up being like that. Other times it ends up being, you know, no two shows are exactly the same. And I mean, you're always going to have like weird corporates and stuff that are just like pouring concrete. That's just work, you know, but like I had a show last night at a little spot here called The Mint. That's also very, very good. Every Wednesday they do a show. It's always sold out with like 100 people. It's very fun. It was so fun. I had so much fun last night. I just did a bunch of corporates in Saskatoon the weekend before and they were fun, but not like this. It's like, that's, I don't know, just showing up and having a good time, just trying to have fun doing it. Like if I can give any advice to any new comics, it's like, just try to have fun, try to be conversational, try to be yourself, try to like, just be yourself on stage and have a good time. Try to talk to the audience the same way you would talk to me. And then everyone will feel safe and comfortable, and it'll just be easier to then find homes for your jokes in that. And that's
Dan,
it.
Dan, this might sound like a weird question, but do you ever get up there and the audience is, they're not really ready to give you that feedback yet, or you kind of lock eyes with somebody and it's like, yeah, this guy looks like he's had a tough week or a tough year. And then they just melt and they're in the palm of your hand. Does that happen sometimes where it's just a tense everybody's stressed, whatever, something's going on, and they're on their at the end of the work week or something, and then you got them. Like, how satisfying is that?
It's great. Yeah, that happens. That happens sometimes, and it's great. Yeah, it's like that's like, I don't know, as good as it gets. It's like, that's the whole point, right? We're clowns. We're there to try to like make people feel better. That's kind of it. So you do that, like, you're hitting the definition of being a comedian. You pull that off. Like, that's kind of, that's the whole point.
Or I guess that's like if you're headlining versus opening, maybe the opener is going through some of that where the...
Yeah, you usually have it a little easier if you're going last. I'll say that. But I host a lot. I like hosting.
Yeah.
Hosting is very fun. Hosting is a good time because you get to come in and set the tone, and I have quite a lot of energy on stage. It's very fun. I really enjoy hosting.
Well, Dan, I could obviously keep talking to you for hours here. This has just been spectacular. I like the theme that I've taken away here is you're in a good place. It's not perfect. It's not ever going to be perfect. And the things going on inside and scrambling through your brain, and as we all have, it's okay to have to deal with that. You know, it's okay if you got a problem that, man, you just can't ever get it completely gone. But
hey, man, I like to say progress, not perfection. And the best advice I can give to somebody who's feeling alone is you don't have to do it alone. There's always somebody who's going to care. And the best, whether it's recovery programs or therapy, cognitive behavior therapy, whatever it is, the best thing is, I think, to just find a way to be brutally honest with yourself. Don't do it alone, and be diligent in continuing to do the work, and and try to find a way to be excited about life, because none of us know what the fuck this is. We're all a bunch of meat sacks full of bones, and if I can change it from, holy shit, I'm a meat sack full of bones, this is terrifying, to, holy shit, I'm a meat sack full of bones, what the fuck, this is awesome. Then those are two, it's like switching that perspective, right? And there's a million different ways to do it. There's no one way. But if you can find a way to be honest with yourself and find a way to like enjoy the journey of whatever it is you're doing, life's going to be a lot better. It's going to be a lot easier. And, you know, reach out to the people who you think don't love you, because they might. They probably do. You know, there's a ton of groups. They got 12 steps for fucking everything these days. Reach out, man. Ask for help. Just throw your hands up. Say you don't know what the fuck you're doing. Someone will help you probably. So.
And hey, how much fun is it? I don't mean to sound like corny or 45-year-old dad mentality or perspective, but is it kind of cool when you go into those recovery groups and all of a sudden you're talking to some guy that mops floors or works in some industry that you'd never be having a conversation with, but he's got a similar problem, and here you are.
It's a melting pot. We got sit in a meeting with like lawyers and people who are unhoused and doctors and lousy alcoholic comedians. Like it's you know, we got a lot more in common than we think we do, you know, everyone as a whole. But I'm gonna go eat dinner, brother.
Well, man, I appreciate you making time for me. This was a big chunk of the evening. Been great for the audience today. Anything that you want to plug that we didn't cover? Any podcasts?
If you're in Canada, I did a set for the Winnipeg Comedy Festival last year, and that debuts tomorrow, November 22nd, on CBC Gem. So you can stream that on CBC Gem starting Friday, November 22nd. Watch me on your TV. That would be great.
Okay. And last question, Dan. I meant to mention this at the start, but I think it's maybe where I got the fascination with other Dans. I was 19 years old, and I started dating a girl, and the previous guy right before me was named Dan. So he was Dan number one, and she said, "You're Dan number two." I think that's where this all started. If you ever had a relationship where somebody had also dated a Dan, and he was like the asshole Dan, and you're like, you know, freshly, you're the good Dan.
I don't think so. Not to my knowledge or that I can remember. I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think I've always been the number one Dan. I don't know, either that I just don't remember. Now I'm going to figure it out. I wonder if that's true.
And I know you got to go, but do you ever, when you meet a Dan or a Danny and you shake hands, does it give you a little bit of a tickle? Are you into it like I am? Or it's like, oh, cool. Hey, we're both Dan. So you have a little quick little quip about it.
Yeah, yeah. I think usually I'll be like, hey, me too. Or I'll be like, nice name. Hell yeah. You know what I don't like? I don't like saying my own name out loud.
Yeah.
If I'm in a Starbucks or somewhere, I always say Daniel.
Oh, really?
I don't like saying Dan. People always think I mean, people always think I heard said, people Damn. Think I said Daryl.
Daryl.
And I'm like, no, I said Dan. I don't know if I mumble or what. So yeah, I don't like saying my own name, but I do like meeting another Dan, but I never trust them. And I think it's because I was up to something for so long.
Yeah.
I don't trust another Dan. Last thing I forgot to mention, March 1st, my special comes out on YouTube.
Check it out, folks. Make sure you follow him. This will be in the show notes, but Dan Duvall Comedy, is it the same across all the platforms?
Yeah. Same on all the platforms, yeah.
All right. Thanks for listening to the Dan Time Podcast. Dan, let's do it again sometime.
Anytime.